This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Get down with you. Now, the prank of the year. And savage it is too.
On closer inspection, a delight becomes a fright for the phone company.
I'm really disappointed about the whole thing.
Now look at this. Look carefully.
T-E-L-E-C-O-M, telecom, and S-U-X, sex.
Oh, yes.
Ain't nothing to work out.
Ain't nothing to know.
Ain't no way you can grow unless you let go.
Ain't nothing to work out.
Kia ora, everyone. Welcome back to Prank of the Year. This is Craig and Luke, and today we've got a little something different. Thanks again to everyone who's listened to our series over the last few months. Since we released our first episode in November, it's been a fun ride, and we've had some really, really awesome feedback from everybody, and really, it's been great to sort of bring this into the world. So we thought we'd share some of that feedback, share some of those questions and stuff, and do a bit of a mailbag episode. I'm joined by Luke.
Hi,
Luke. How you doing?
Yeah, pretty good. Happy to be doing this. Happy to be on the mic for once.
Yeah, it's interesting, eh? Like we, I guess the audience is probably quite used to hearing my voice, but not you as much. So
I'm quite used to hearing your voice at this point.
Yeah, listening to all those sleepless nights in the edit suite. So over the last few months, we've been soliciting a bunch of questions from the listeners, and I got a few of them here, and maybe we could just get cracking with them. What do you reckon?
Yeah, we'll run through, we'll waffle on, we'll see what we get.
Okay, cool. So our first question, first email comes from Josh from Chicago. Josh writes, "Hey Craig and Luke, I really enjoyed the show. I'm confident that it was someone at the printer/scanner that defaced the painting. They had the most access for the longest time. Telecom could have investigated and found them, but they still would have been able to say one of our employees was not responsible." Josh's question is, if you guys could prank a mega corporation, what would you pick? I would prank X, I guess Twitter, because of Elon's fragile ego. Much love, Josh from Chicago.
I think the printer thing's a good take. I've heard that from a few people. Yeah, maybe we slept on that, but I still stand by the idea that the printers would have been potentially one person. Ooh, are you risking it?
Yeah.
But he's right. They've got a great opportunity.
Yeah, and I recall that when we were doing our theorizing in that last episode, when we were looking at all of the different theories, I think we did wonder whether we do a bit where we sort of rank them in order of probability. Like if we say this is the most probable, followed by this one, followed by this one.
Yeah.
And I think we just sort of decided to cut that for time because
it got a bit repetitive in the
end. Yeah, got a bit long-winded. But I think, if I remember correctly, I think that as we discussed that, we decided that it was probably the printer or the scanner that was probably the second most likely.
It was definitely top three.
Yeah,
it was definitely top three. I think it was second for both of us.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think we're absolutely in agreement there, Josh. And I think that, yeah, if it wasn't someone at Telecom, then it would be very surprising if it wasn't someone at the printer or at the scanning house.
Scanner particularly, yeah.
Yeah. It always makes me laugh when you get emails from Twitter that says, you know, this email's from X, formerly Twitter. I just think it was a really stupid rebranding exercise. Who would you prank? What mega corporation would you prank?
I don't know. We full disclosure, we have had these questions for a while, and I've been thinking about it. And I think sitting here, you know, in the beginning of 2024, Elon Musk is too dangerous to laugh at.
Yeah.
So I would be going for a smaller fish. I know in New Zealand, we're really feeling the backlash of some duopolies in our supermarket and food sector that I think people are complaining about, but I think that, you know, those are some corporations that could really do with being made fun of and having the chip knocked off their shoulders.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great idea. I've been thinking about this as well. I think if I was going to do something like this, I probably would want to target a corporation that I feel does damage to society. So I might go after a social media company because I'm not a big fan of them. If I wasn't, though, I'd probably prank maybe a payday loan company. Either that or I don't know if they have them in Chicago, but in Auckland especially, they have these awful trucks that will drive around selling stuff. They'll drive around to sort of like low socioeconomic areas and they'll sell stuff at inflated prices with like huge interest rates to vulnerable people. That really upsets and irritates me, that kind of practice. So either a payday loan company or one of those awful trucks or Facebook or something. Cool. Thanks for your question, Josh.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from James, who says, "Hi, Craig and Luke. Curious to know, what podcasts do you listen to? Are you particularly drawn to true crime stories? And follow-up question, have you heard of Who Shat on the Floor at My Wedding?" Yeah, I got to say, this is a question we get a lot. Every time I try and explain the concept of Prank of the Year to anybody, maybe at least half the time they'll say, "Oh, have you heard of Who Shat on the Floor at My Wedding?" Which, if you haven't heard of that particular podcast, give that a listen, because it's good fun. It's exactly what it sounds like in the title.
Yeah. I think if you've enjoyed our podcast, you're almost certain to enjoy that one.
Yeah, it's had a real sort of viral kind of moment over the last 12 months or so. What do you listen to, Luke? You're not much of a podcast guy.
No, shamefully, I'm not really. I probably should be. The only thing I listen to religiously is No Such Thing as a Fish.
Right.
That's my, if I'm on the train or the bus and I don't want to listen to music, that's my go-to.
Right.
And I did listen to Who Shat on the Floor at My Wedding after you suggested it.
Right.
Kind of, because it's an amazing hook, kind of for research for this. Yeah. It is bafflingly compelling.
Yeah, it really is. I thought it was a really funny and entertaining show. Who Shat? It didn't really inspire anything directly with Prank of the Year, but I did listen to the final episode of that a few times, because I was, as we were preparing our final episode, I wanted to sort of see what other podcast series who didn't have a black and white conclusion to their mystery, how they kind of handled relaying that in their last episode. So I did listen to the finale of that a few times as well, just to sort of get a sense of that.
Yeah, and not only see how, like, we really sincerely were not confident as we recorded this thing about whether or not we could pull a satisfying ending out of it.
Mm.
We really needed a lot of reassurance, and looking at how other things that ended open-ended handled their closing and you know, rolled stuff out and what they held back. It was necessary to build confidence to know that we could close this thing off in a satisfying way, or at least I hope we did.
Mm. Yeah. In terms of other podcasts, I'm a bit of a podcast junkie. I listen to a few, and I mean, I definitely did go through a true crime phase a while ago. I have been a little bit burnt out on murder sort of true crime stories, to be honest. But I do have to give a big shout out to Ryan at Brevity Studios and his podcast, Guilt.
Oh my God, yeah.
Yeah. We reached out to Ryan as we were sort of developing Prank of the Year in earnest. And he really, really helped us out with a lot of the technical stuff, a lot of the structural stuff, and just how to, you know, a lot of production stuff. You know, his support and advice there was really, really valuable. So, and his pod has just been going gangbusters. He's just releasing his fourth season now, but season three, which was about the Swedish backpackers, a very famous cold case in New Zealand history, was absolutely gripping.
Yeah. For a guy having that much success, he was so generous in helping us out when we had questions. And really, it'd be great if you wanted to go and check out his stuff, because he's a lovely guy.
Yeah, absolutely. Another one that I just wanted to bring up as well is a series that I think is really, really underrated. It's called Sophie's Fall, and it came out of Australia a few years ago. In a nutshell, it's about a young woman, true story about a young woman who was sort of found dead in the rubbish room of a fancy apartment building in Melbourne. She had fallen from one of the top floors via the rubbish chute, and it's absolutely unclear whether she put herself into the chute or if someone had put her in there, and whether she was alive or dead before she went in there or how she got in there. It's absolutely fascinating. She was, she was in a relationship with an older man whose parents were, quite high in the local judicial system. So there's all these kind of accusations about stuff being covered up. It's a really, really fascinating series. It's a few years old now, but, if you want a nice kind of short series, about a similar kind of mystery, I can really recommend that. Sophie's Fall.
Yeah, we'll be contacting all these fine podcasters for our royalties.
we'll send them an invoice. Another question here about sort of our process, I guess.
Okay.
Hey, Craig and Luke, love the show. It was a lot of fun. Thank you very much. Can you share a little bit about your research and production process? How did you go about tracking people down and following leads? How did you decide to narrow stuff down? Did it really take you 5 years?
Oh, God.
And are you glad to be rid of it, or do you miss it? All the best from Lawrence. Thanks for the question, Lawrence. What do you reckon?
Was it really only 5 years? I think a lot of our research, what we knew early on that was a challenge, and a challenge we were up for because we just, for whatever reason, were both really, really compelled by this idea. What we knew was going to be a challenge early on was that we were probably not going to be able to find who did this or why. That was going to be a Hail Mary. It was going to be incredibly good luck if we did find that out. And so what we needed to do is, alongside trying to find anyone who was involved in it who could talk to us about it, which was just, trawling around the internet, rolling the dice and hoping.
Mm.
We also needed to be looking at what kind of tangents we could go down that would lead somewhere interesting.
Mm.
So a lot of our research was about, what are related areas and how can we talk to interesting people in these areas?
Mm.
Not because they'll give us answers, but because they'll give us context and they'll give us something interesting to talk about. So I think particularly about episode 5 was always on our slate as the art crime episode.
Mm.
And I think when we eventually scripted and recorded it, it ended up as less of an outlier than we actually planned it to be.
Yeah, right.
But that was meant to be a real deep dive into something completely unrelated, talking about what art crime is and, you know, how it happens in other places. And I think that was always the kind of thinking that guided a lot of our research was, what else can we talk about that we're interested in while we're just crossing our fingers and getting out there trying to find people? And I know we don't want to, you know, be completely transparent about how we found some people who were involved just because, you know, privacy is a thing. But, Craig's predominantly our researcher. I think you just about got qualifications to become a journalist along this thing. What did you do?
The starting point was always using as many primary sources as you can. So when we started this, the very first thing that we did was that we tried to find news reporting from the time, because that was kind of our, and, you know, in the first and second episode, we kind of go into that a little bit. You know, if something wasn't online, we'd have to find it manually in an archive, which is what we did. From there, every sort of piece of every news article or every piece of evidence that we found would produce a bunch more leads. So, for instance, every news article that we found would mention a person who was quoted or a person who was involved at, you know, the spokesperson from Telecom was this person, or the, you know, whatever it was. Then it was kind of a process of trying to find those people. LinkedIn is a good source for that sometimes.
Well, we have that whole interview we omitted.
Yeah.
We actually, we found one of the writers of one of our early articles and we spoke to her, and it just didn't fit into an episode anywhere. I feel a little bit bad about that, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, no, we'll, there was definitely stuff that we had to sort of cut, which we, you know, was a shame. Probably the biggest challenge in terms of our research and production was finding someone that was willing to talk to us who worked at Telecom at the time. Mm-hmm. I remember that was a real struggle.
Which is weird, because you'd think they'd have a lot of employees at the time, but that was just something we never quite nailed down.
Yeah. And it was great to be able to talk to Jan when we did. But I mean, the way that we found him was we basically found a Facebook group for people who were ex-New Zealand Post Office staff. And I reached out to the admin of the group and said, hey, look, I understand there's probably a few people in this group that would have worked for Telecom after they worked for the Post Office. Would you mind if, you know, here's what we want to do. We want to speak to somebody. Can we post this, you know, this ad? Yeah. And then, and they were open to that, and we were able to, and we got a few responses from people, and we managed to nail down an interview with Jan, who gave us some really, really great insight.
Yeah, Jan ended up being a great interview. It's been really great getting to know these people, you know, letting them tell a little bit of their life story and just letting that breathe. That's been one of the more fun parts of the podcast for me.
Yeah. You asked, Lawrence, did it really take 5 years? The answer is yes. But
the answer is it's six now.
Not consistently, though.
No.
The genesis of this idea sort of came to me in 2017, and we sort of went through it a little bit. We sort of developed it over time, but the impetus for us to actually pull finger and produce some actual episodes was the fact that December 2023 was going to be the 30th anniversary of this thing happening, and I just really liked the poetry of releasing our last episode on that date, effectively.
Having a deadline was good, too, because we could have just kept hanging around hoping that more would turn up, but that underscored things nicely, I think.
Yeah. And what do you reckon, Luke? Do you miss it? Or are you glad to see the back end of it?
I think it's telling that, you know, that this was absolutely a project that it's nice to have a project with a friend, because it gives you something consistent to do when you hang out, and it forces you to see each other regularly, even when, you know, maybe you wouldn't otherwise make space for a person in life, just because life is like that sometimes.
Yeah, right.
I know Craig's a parent, so that, you know, can be demanding.
Yeah.
So I think it's telling that now every time we've got together, we've talked about it.
Yeah, right.
And yeah, we've kind of fallen into this habit of making vague plans for a thing that's finished and not knowing what to do with them. I know we're going to talk about it a bit later in the episode, but you actually, after this thing released, the first time we talked, you'd lined up another interview.
Yeah, that's right.
For an episode we didn't have.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah, and we'll kind of get to that. Yeah, I mean, in a way, I'm kind of glad to have it behind me because it was, you know, especially in those last kind of, you know, once we'd released the first episode, there was really a lot of pressure to sort of
keep to the
timeline. Yeah, keep pace. Yeah. And yeah, it was a lot of extra hours to produce this thing.
Unlike other podcasts, it's fully scripted. So we're writing the scripts. We're editing from multiple takes until we find good ones. It's a bit more labor than what we're doing now, which is just sitting down at a table and chatting, which is kind of a nice change of pace.
Yeah. I will miss aspects of it, though. I think not coming to a full conclusion sort of does lead to wanting to know more or wondering about, is there extra stuff that we can look into here or there or whatever? So I kind of miss that aspect of it, but yeah, it's a double-edged sword. Let's just put it at that. Thanks, Lawrence, for your question. Now, we have another question, quite a long-winded one, about the artist. Hello.
Okay.
I really enjoyed listening to the podcasts, and I have several questions regarding the artist. How can he not know where the painting is or where it went to? This has become a controversial piece, and he was even threatened to hand it over. But then it just gets forgotten about and mislaid, and yet he can locate a file of correspondence and notes regarding the whole affair. And supposedly he is threatened by two burly men in a van purporting to be from telecom security. He is so scared he runs into a neighbor's place and hides behind a hedge, but he never reports this to the police, which surely would have been an excellent idea at the time in case they returned, and in case they weren't telecom security. I also find it very suspicious that the artist was going to have the painting auctioned and the proceeds go to Woman's Refuge, but this didn't happen, and miraculously, telecom just happens to make a larger donation to Woman's Refuge at the time. It appears that the logo and writing are very, very small and well hidden in the painting, so could they not have been there all along? And it appears that absolutely no one else noticed it until the artist brought it to the attention of telecom. Were you able to confirm that the artist's friend, that it was with him, and noticed that it on the card? I am left with a very strong suspicion that the artist had a bit of a grudge against telecom and painted this into the painting in the beginning, but made it so small as to be virtually invisible, rather like making a rude gesture at someone's back rather than their face, satisfying but undetected. He mentions the staff redundancies, the dropping of the Santa phone line, and even refers to a bio of Rod Dean, the CEO, so he was quite knowledgeable regarding telecom's transgressions. Since he had only just started painting 6 months prior to the competition, I would think that he may have hoped to, but certainly didn't expect to win, either as a telephone book cover or as a Christmas card. Being selected was a bonus, but he had to ensure nobody suspected him. But I guess this will always remain one of life's mysteries.
It's not the first time I've had people ask about Gray. So I think you and I are very comfortable that, you know, he's low down on the list. I mean, it's not a long suspect list, and he certainly ranks above some of the more unlikely ones for me. But hi, Gray. I know you're a listener. You might be listening to this one. I think we probably did a poor job of sharing why we're so certain we wanted to exonerate him. And I think what we didn't mention, because I've been thinking about this, you know, since people have been coming to me with it, I think the thing we never mentioned is he didn't have to talk to us.
No.
He would have found it extremely easy to ignore us when we first found him, or refuse to talk, or just deny being the same person, you know? I think the fact he bothered to come forward and speak to us is a pretty clear sign that what he's saying is the straightforward truth. You know,
yeah.
that and it occurs to me that that's not something we pointed out in the episode, you know. We certainly weren't ever going to out that we'd found him if he wasn't willing to participate.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, we did mention this in the episode as well, but, you know, he was not an easy person to track down. And, you know, it was a bit of a roundabout way that we found him eventually. And, you know, like we said in our final episode, you know, on paper, you could look at him as a, you know, one of the more plausible suspects. You know, it is true that he had the most access to the painting before it was submitted. And if he had, and even if he had defaced it because he felt strongly about Telecom, you know, he would have been within his rights to do so, as we said.
Oh yeah, I mean that was the big thing that we talked about. You know, he did nothing wrong if he did it.
Yeah.
So why would he not?
Yeah. We have been in contact with Gray a little bit since the release of our last episode. Unfortunately, we didn't have a chance to put any of this stuff to him specifically. But I will say that, you know, I still believe that his ongoing denial that he was the culprit, that hasn't changed in our opinion since the final episode.
No.
Yeah, just to sort of speak to a couple of specific points that you've raised there, we know that he stumbled upon the Telecom correspondence by accident. You know, he basically told us that he was spring cleaning and had nothing better to do and found it in an old filing cabinet, and, you know, we've got no reason to doubt that. As to his feelings towards Telecom before the incident, we don't know that for sure. But what we do know is that a lot of the stuff that he refers to, such as the staff cuts and the Santa line thing and all that kind of stuff, I mean, Telecom was in the news a lot back in the 90s. You know, they're a massive company, and they were constantly in the news and often for not great stuff. We do know for sure that the profile of Rod Dean that he sent us, that was from mid-1994. If any ill feelings towards Telecom developed as a result of the Christmas card incident,
which would be pretty understandable,
then you know, perhaps he held on to that bio for those reasons. I mean,
he also is the kind of guy who would just hang on to stuff. You know, having well, Craig's been emailing him, not me, not so much. I've been seeing the transcripts, but. He's definitely the kind of guy who sort of has scrapbooks and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
I imagine Telecom isn't the only kind of thing that he's hanging on to.
Yeah. Ultimately, I guess, you know, I guess there is a world in which he defaced the painting without expecting it to be a card. Maybe it all went too far. But I guess the final word I would say on it is that if it were me that had done something like this, I probably wouldn't deny it consistently for 30 years.
And if it were me, I probably wouldn't partake in a podcast about it. You know, yeah. I wouldn't be participating.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so I don't know if that makes our case any better. What about the painting? Did we have any more on that?
The location of the painting? It is, well, I wish I had a question about that. Yeah, Nancy writes to us, I had a few questions about the artist. How does Gray feel about the podcast? Do you know if he's been able to locate the painting? Thanks, from Nancy. Not Nancy Drew.
Are you sure?
So, like I said, we've been in regular contact with Gray since the end of the series. I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I feel like we're on pretty good terms with him and that he enjoyed the series.
He's been really supportive and lovely. And yeah, know, I'm glad he was part of it. I'm really glad he was part of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we've talked about, you know, if he finds himself in Auckland or we find ourselves in Dunedin, that, you know, it'll be great to go out for lunch or something like that.
Yeah.
As far as we know, he hasn't located the painting and is still unaware of its whereabouts. But he did actually share something interesting, a little interesting tidbit about it, though. After the series came out, I sort of put him the question, because I was kind of curious to know what inspired the painting. You know, was it a particular place in Otago that he had painted?
Well, Linda Tyler was speculating on the same thing in her interview. We didn't make it into the episode, but she speculated quite a bit about where it could be and tried to work it out for herself.
Yeah, this is Linda Tyler, the art professor who was a judge in the 1994 Otago Art Awards. Yeah, so I put that to Gray. You know, where was this painting set? As it turns out, it's not actually set in one specific place. It's rather an amalgamation of places around the region. So all of the different elements that you see in Gray's painting, you know, the cottage, the sheepdogs, the mountains, the beach, all that stuff, is all kind of a collection of places that he'd been to around the Otago region, things that he'd seen in his travels, but they weren't all in one place. So he took these different elements that he'd seen and, yeah, combined them all into the painting, which I think is quite a cool... You know, the purpose of the Telecom Art Awards was to produce art that reflected your local region. And I think doing it in that way is a really cool way to, you know, to do that.
Yeah, so, that's bang on brief. It's not just one place. It represents the whole place. Yeah. That's lovely.
Yeah. And I haven't spent much time in Otago. Have you, Luke? Have you been down there much?
No. Very little time in the South Island at all.
It's a beautiful part of the country. It's a really rugged coastline, really beautiful beautiful place. Yeah, if you're ever in the area, you know, go have a wander through Otago. It's beautiful.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Jake writes to us, hey, Craig and Luke. This is a crazy story, and I'm glad you're able to get it out. What has the reception to the podcast been like? Have you had any deathbed confessions or anything yet? And has there been anything that's changed your mind past the conclusion you drew at the end of the series? Keen to see what you come up with next, from Jake. Well, thanks, Jake. The reception has been pretty good. You know, we're not anywhere close to Joe Rogan numbers or anything yet, but it seems to have been received pretty well. Yeah, what do you reckon? Like, I mean, it's been out there for a while.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't heard a lot back about it. You've been managing our social media channels and that sort of thing. But the people who have listened to it, most of them have made it to the end. Most of them have been excited about the conclusion. I'm happy with it, which isn't something I can always say about, you know.
Yeah,
the stuff I make, I'm usually pretty picky, and I'm surprised to find I'm pretty happy. So, that's been the real metric for me. I'm pretty satisfied.
Cool. We did also get a little bit of coverage in the local press as well.
Yeah, we did.
The spin-off news website published a little piece that I wrote about the incident that got a lot of good response.
Radio New Zealand on the day the finale came out. That was awesome.
Yeah, we spoke to Mark Leishman on RNZ Nights that evening, which was really cool.
That wasn't something we expected at all. It was nice publicity.
Yeah, so that was good fun. Jake, you ask about deathbed confessions or any kind of new information that's come forward. I think so I'm gonna tread really carefully here, because
keep it vague and we can cut in the edit if need be.
Look, I am gonna tread carefully here because there are some sensitivities at play, but the answer to your question about any new information coming to light is kind of or maybe perhaps
or not really.
So here's what kind of happened in sort of vague terms. So on the 22nd of December, we released our final episode. And that evening, we, like I just said, we were interviewed on Radio New Zealand. A day or two after that, we received an email from someone who had heard that interview and then had listened to the series. We don't know this person's name. They used a pseudonym and a generic email address to kind of protect their identity. And they made some claims, which I'm going to be quick to say we haven't been able to verify. They're also pretty tight-lipped on some of the details that they did share. What I can say is that their email suggested that the painting's defacement was done by an individual who was involved with similar acts of what they describe as mischief during the 1990s.
I think we can probably use the description they did.
Yeah. The term they used was a New Zealand Banksy. The person that emailed us, they also mentioned that they had been involved in one of these acts during the 1990s, but they refused to elaborate any further on, I guess, the nature of it. So we don't know what kind of incident it was or what kind of impact it had.
No.
They told us that the defacer was now an elderly gent and they were no longer in contact with them. But somehow they did know that he had listened to the series. So if you are listening to this, hello, please email us. Excuse me. Look, we went back and forth with this anonymous source for weeks by email. And they were, like I said, they were just really, really tight-lipped. They kept most of the details to themselves.
It was a very circular conversation.
Yeah. And look, it was tricky because for all we knew, they could have just been trolling us. And we sort of have no idea how much, if any, stock to put in their story. There was one thing that made us... One thing that sort of gave us pause, though. One thing that they showed us, which made us consider that this might have some validity to their claims.
Yeah, they've definitely got some contact with the chain of events that we described in a very tenuous way, and I think that's as specific as we can be.
Yeah, look, I don't want to go into any detail, but they did give us they were able to produce a specific piece of evidence, which is definitely unusual that they had it.
It's not nothing. Yeah. Look, us being coy about this and being careful is making it sound way more exciting than it actually is. I am pretty firmly convinced that this is someone who perhaps had this piece of evidence we're talking about on hand, as I think many, many people could, happened to have preserved it and either mistakenly believes that they've got a missing piece or, you know, just wants to give us a bit of a run around. I don't think there's anything substantial there. I know, Craig, you desperately want there to be, I just don't buy it. I don't see it. There hasn't been enough there for me to think that it's worth pursuing.
Yeah, look. And look, we apologize for having to be sort of purposely vague here.
Yeah, it's not to titillate. It is because we don't want to say anything, but, you know,
yeah,
anyone doesn't want us to.
Yeah, exactly. We don't want to, you know, put any carts before horses or, you know, or raise any expectations or anything like that. Having said that, if anything that we've just said sparks anything for anybody listening, if anyone has any information that knows what the hell we're talking about and can shed any more light on this, then absolutely get in touch.
Yeah, we're always open to an episode 7 if there's enough content for a half hour episode. And that was my bottom line. Those emails did not give me half an hour of content.
Absolutely. Cool. That's telecom sucks, TelecomSux 1993@gmail.com if you want to get in touch.
Mm-hmm.
Richard writes, "Hey gang, my partner and I listened to the entire podcast on a trip up north for New Year's. Fortunately, there was a lot of traffic, so we got through the whole thing in one sitting."
Wow.
"Some questions for you. Have there been any other small stakes mysteries that you'd love to dive into for a second season? My suggestion is the 1996 Rainbow Connection incident. Why do you think that NZ seems to love stories like this? I'm reminded of some of Guy Williams' work on New Zealand Today. Was there anything you had to cut for time or wish you could have delved deeper into? What are your favourite mysteries, i.e. novels, movies, docos? How'd you get the guy who voiced the artist? He was great! Love your work. Thanks, Richard and Jess. So thanks, Richard and Jess. I'm so glad that you were given the gift of New Zealand holiday traffic.
Gift of 3.5 hours of us.
And just for context, Richard was the guy who voiced the Grey Dixon text in our final episode. So when he asks, how'd you get the guy who voiced the artist? He was great. You know, he was okay, I guess. We have kind of been thinking about low stakes mysteries, but I mean, we haven't really found anything as compelling as the Christmas card incident yet, have we?
Look, it took a lot to get through this and to get enough meat on the bone to turn it into a 6-part series and an interesting 6-part series. And I think I can't put my finger on why you and I were both just so compelled and so passionate about this particular situation, but we would need that again to get to the end of another series.
Mm.
It has to be something that we go, oh, that.
Yeah.
You know? Absolutely. And that's, I'm not going to force that. No. This isn't a job for either of us. You know, it's a project that we've done as friends to hang out.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't want to turn it into work.
No. Do you know anything about the Rainbow Connection incident, Luke?
I didn't until this came in, and you did your research and told me.
Yeah,
about it.
So
it is fascinating.
Yeah, so it is one of those kind of strange little stories that you might have stumbled across when it happened and then sort of had forgotten about. But basically, the Rainbow Connection incident was something that happened back in Whanganui back in 1996. In a nutshell, a young man forced his way into the local radio station down there. He took the station manager hostage, and he demanded that the radio station play the Rainbow Connection, the Kermit the Frog song from the Muppet movie, for 24 hours straight. Otherwise, he would detonate a bomb. As it turns out, the station didn't have a copy of the song, and I think the guy was detained pretty soon afterwards. It was discovered that the bomb was actually fake. But the mystery is that nobody seems to really know what happened to the guy afterwards, though.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting one. There's not a massive amount to go on this. I did look into it a little bit. Most recent thing I could find was that, you know, about 10 years ago, there was a journalist from the States who kind of stumbled across the story and was really interested in investigating it. But there's really been nothing ever since. I mean, as far as I can tell, it was most likely that the young man involved was, did what he did as a result of some kind of mental health crisis at the time. And I'm not especially keen to open up an old wound like that.
No, that's the thing. I think, you know, journalists are very interested in the pursuit of truth.
Mm.
One of the luxuries we have by turning this into a story rather than a journalistic investigation is we can be more interested in empathy.
Yeah, right.
And I don't want to tell a story that opens a wound for anyone.
Yeah.
I want to tell a story that people enjoy and that, you know.
Yeah.
And this was really low stakes, what we've just done, and going into something that might upset someone doesn't make me as happy.
Yeah, and I mean, and that's kind of always been our approach, hasn't it? I mean, when we first made contact with Gray, you know, we were, you know, that was on our mind. We were thinking, you know, if he's been really affected by this, you know, thing that happened 30 years ago and we come in dredging up the past and he doesn't want that, then, I mean, we were prepared to walk away from the whole thing.
Oh, yeah, we'd have canned it. I mean, you know, if we didn't have Gray's blessing to go ahead, this wouldn't have happened.
Yeah. So, yeah, we've not really got any desire to sort of you know, rake through the mud or anything like that. Yeah. Why do Kiwis like stories like this? I don't know. There's probably something there in our national psyche, being a small fish globally, perhaps. I mean, I think traditionally New Zealand and New Zealanders have sort of traditionally had this culture of, I guess, larrikinism, and they kind of like shining a spotlight on that. What do you reckon? Why do these stories resonate with Kiwis, do you think?
I don't know. I think we really... we're just drawn to odd things. I mean, it you talk about it in the film space too. A lot of New Zealand comedies and New Zealand humour doesn't travel well.
Yeah, right.
Because we just have this really sardonic wit. We're drawn to this very earthy black comedy, and there's just something in our, not necessarily even our culture, it's not who we are as a people, but in our media that just really digs into this kind of stuff.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's true. And I mean, you look at an example like, you know, when, you know, like some of the films of like Taika Waititi, for instance, you know, when Boy came out, you know, it got a massive response with New Zealand audiences who thought it was hilarious. And then, you know, it plays overseas and all the audience is like, this is supposed to be funny.
That's exactly what I was thinking. Yeah, people thought it was a tragedy. Yeah. Yeah, it's just something about, I don't think it's even our culture. I think it's just our media. We just do this. I don't want to start, you know, going all film theorist on you. Mm. But we talk about things like the culture of cinema of unease and that sort of thing. It's just, it's been around as long as we've had film and media.
Hmm. Yeah, interesting question. What could we have dived into deeper? I mean, I feel like there's tons of stuff that we could have dived into. I mean, even, you know, we sort of spoke about it before. We talked to so many people and interviewed so many people for these, and we just couldn't find a way to logically include everything that we included, you know, we spoke to them about in the...
Yeah, we had interviews before we had episode formats, and in breaking it down and tidying it up into those bite-sized chunks, some of those interviews, through no fault of the merit of the actual interview, just didn't fit.
Yeah, there was no logical way to slot them into the episode. I think the single most frustrating thing that was missing that we couldn't get to the bottom of was the location of the cards printing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You would have thought that would be doable.
Yeah. I thought if we had known which company scanned and or printed the cards, I feel like that would have unlocked so much more for opportunity for us. That would have given us so much more to go on and maybe draw a more complete conclusion.
Well, we certainly wouldn't have been guessing about, for instance, how many people conducted the scanning and whether or not it was one individual being highly exposed or a company where there was plausible deniability for everyone in there.
Yeah, look, and don't get me wrong. I mean, I think it was great that, you know, Brian at SCG gave us his time and talked us through everything. I think that made for some amazing content.
Oh, he was also just so generous with us.
Yeah, absolutely. And he put us on to Tom, who defaced the Yellow Pages, which is just a hell of a side story.
Yeah, nothing to do with what we were exploring, but just such a great yarn.
Yeah, such a great yarn. So yeah, that was great. Favorite mysteries? You're a bit of a Doco fan, aren't you, Link?
I am, but I can't think off the top of my head of many that have been around mysteries. You know, I immediately think, when I think of sort of weird New Zealand stories, of like David Farrier, and I know you and I went and saw Mr. Organ on our, on one of the premiere screenings in Auckland.
Mm.
But that's not a mystery. That's just horrifying.
Yeah. And I think, and it's interesting you bring that up, actually, because that's sort of something that we sort of look to as we were developing and trying to figure out how we conclude our story. That's kind of a text that we looked at and sort of said, well, you know, this doesn't have a nice tidy bow you know, to wrap everything up.
No, it's just got poor David having a bit of a mental breakdown and fleeing the country.
Yeah. But that's something we sort of look to and say, well, how did David Farrier end that story? You know, how did he end that narrative? And, you know, is there anything we can extrapolate for our story?
Yeah, which is why we were eventually we centered on very gently making you the character in it, because ultimately this is Craig's story as much as anyone else, because that's the story we can end.
Sure, yeah. I really like documentaries. I think one of the best ones I've seen in the past few years, it doesn't directly, you know, it wasn't a direct inspiration for this or anything, but there was a film that came out a few years ago called Three Identical Strangers.
Ah, yes.
Absolutely incredible story, and to my mind, a perfectly structured doco.
Yeah.
The way they reveal information and portion out the structure of their storytelling is just absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
Absolutely check that out. It's highly recommended.
Oh, God, yeah. It's an amazing story. And I think there are docos in the world where the documentarians just get lucky that they have the cameras rolling in the right window of someone's life.
Yeah.
And that is one where they just got lucky. They got a perfect story format when they happened to be rolling the cameras. It's not a mystery one, but another one I think is near a perfect documentary is King of Kong.
Oh, yes.
Absolutely adore that.
Yeah. Again, a flawlessly structured and constructed documentary. That's, yeah.
If you didn't know it was a true story, you would think it was made up because it's just such a perfect underdog tale.
Yeah. And, I mean, this is a complete tangent, but, you know, a while ago I was watching kind of the special features on the DVD for that, and there were all these cool little side stories, you know, of people that were in that community that, you know, that they were kind of, they couldn't fit them into the narrative that they were doing in the film, but they're just really interesting stories in their own right.
If it was done today, it'd be a Netflix series and they'd have space for that sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. No, great, great film. What about fictional mysteries? Anything jumping out at you?
Fictional mysteries. I know I must be able to answer that. I mean, I've watched a few mystery stories recently, but nothing that's standing out.
Super memorable.
Nothing super memorable.
No. I guess in terms of fictional mysteries, anyone who knows me knows that I'm an enormous fan of Twin Peaks.
God, yes.
It's probably my favorite piece of media of all time. That's just a show that is just built around mystery and the concept of mystery. And
the mystery of what the hell it's about.
Yeah, exactly. And I think one of the brilliant and frustrating things about that is that the mysteries aren't answered. In fact, I almost wrote, you know, so Twin Peaks was the series that came out in the early 90s, directed by American filmmaker David Lynch. It had a third season that came out in 2017, which, you know, was like a distant sequel. And I actually was very close to including a David Lynch quote in our final episode, I've got that in front of me here. So David Lynch says on mysteries, "There is nothing more beautiful than mystery. I think you make people unhappy by solving all the mysteries. Once a mystery is solved, you forget it and you move on to the next one. An unsolved mystery is frustrating, but it's like a gift. It gives birth to ideas." And I think that, you know, extrapolating that out further towards our series and stuff, that's kind of what we've done, like, a little bit. I mean, I think, you know, it's an unsolved mystery and that is frustrating in some ways, but it has given birth to a few additional ideas. And
I think what we're saying is you're welcome for, you know, not finishing this series.
For not coming to a conclusion.
Yeah.
Well, strange enough, our last question is kind of about that.
Okay.
So Alex writes, "Kia ora. Any plans to expand the story into other formats, e.g. a documentary, a book, etc.? Also, do you have plans for a second season?" So, thanks, Alex, for the question. I mean, this project kind of started its life as a documentary, didn't it?
It was a documentary, and then it was a book, and then it was a podcast.
Yeah, so, I mean, the the genesis of this idea is that, I mean, you can probably tell the story better than I can, Luke, but we kind of had an opportunity to develop an idea for a short documentary
We did. You may or may not have heard of a funding body for documentaries in New Zealand called Loading Docs, and they fund 10-minute documentaries that play on TVNZ and get distributed elsewhere. And that, to me, seemed like low-hanging fruit just to sort of build on my filmography while I'm working on feature films, which can be in production for years and you just look like you're doing nothing. So I came to Craig and I said, you know, I'm looking at this, but I don't have any ideas for a doco. What do you reckon? Craig's a great ideas guy. And he came to me with this memory, which is just so out there and so not what I expected. And I fell in love with the idea. But I think we pretty swiftly realized that it's not very visual. Mm. And documentaries need something to look at. You know, it's a visual medium.
Yeah.
So we moved on from there and we knew we wanted to pursue it. And so one of the things I pitched was, well, do we write it as a book? Do we do our research as sort of a short novel or, you know, something like that? Maybe that's compelling because there are pictures and images and stills that we can include. And we kind of both came to the conclusion that we didn't know if we had enough volume for full-on prose.
Yeah, right.
And then the idea of a podcast just cropped up, and it was just perfect.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I think the other thing too, I mean, it's absolutely true that, you know, there wasn't that there was a real lack of kind of visual elements that a documentary would need. The other thing too is that, you know, if we developed this as a short documentary for that funding round, we would have to limit it to sort of a 10-minute thing. And the more we looked into it, the more we sort of realized, well, if we're going to tell a story, we're going to have to either really skim over lightly to squeeze it into 10 minutes, or we just have to give it space to breathe and, you know, do it a little bit more longer form.
And I don't know about you, but I think the thing that made this interesting, the thing that, you know, the hurdle we had to get over to make this an interesting story to tell, was to start with that place of not knowing where the hell to go with it, of just being completely isolated with no information online and no options, to start from that place of being stuck and to gradually, you know, dig our way out. It was, you know, digging up.
Yeah, absolutely. And it just turned out that, you know, podcast was sort of the perfect format for that, right? Like, it was just great for that kind of story. It allowed us to explore different aspects of what we were investigating and to kind of weave the story into, I guess, a more episodic way. So that worked out really well.
Yeah, we got to meander in a way that I think was successful. I feel was successful.
Yeah, absolutely. No, like we said earlier, there's no current plans for a second season, unless we hear from someone who can give us more information about this incident, or unless we stumble across another story that's as compelling as this, then we sort of don't have a plan for any further exploration of this topic specifically.
Yeah, it's been fun, and if the right idea comes up, we will do it again, but it needs to be the right idea. But actually, to give the right idea an opportunity to come up, we did have a plan to sort of keep this thing a little bit alive.
Yeah, so like I said, we won't, our plans aren't to produce any more narrative episodes of this, but having said that, there will be more content in this feed over the coming months. We alluded to it earlier, but basically we were kind of bummed that we weren't able to incorporate more of our interviews into the episodes that we produced. We met with tons of really insightful and interesting people and had some just fantastic conversations with them, sort of during our research and during our production phase. And we felt it was a bit of a waste to kind of not share these.
Yeah, it got really painful in the editing room sometimes to get people's full interviews down to 3 minutes, because that was the ceiling we put on ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely. So over the next couple of months, we are going to share those. We're going to do just that. Every few weeks, we're going to drop a new episode into the feed, which will basically just be an extended interview with some of the experts that we've spoken to about particular topics. So an example of that could be Penelope, who we heard from in episode 5 about art crime.
Yep.
We'll more or less post their entire interview there because she had some fantastic insights and, you know, some really, really good corridor. And it was just a really great way to be able to. And we found that this was kind of a way to not have that languishing on our hard drives, basically, just to put that out into the world.
Yeah, seemed like a waste to have it and not share it.
Yeah.
And we'll also perhaps do a few new interviews because some opportunities have come up for people that maybe if we were still working on the podcast, we would have talked to.
Yeah.
And I don't see a reason we can't jump on a call and record it and, you know, get some of those interviews up as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, having said that, if anyone listening to this has anything, any particular areas of expertise that, you know, is related to some of the topics that we've covered in here and is keen to, you know, potentially talk to us about some of that stuff, then, yeah, by all means, we'd love to hear from you. Yeah.
Yeah, this sort of full-on interview format isn't the future of the podcast. We don't know what we're going to do with it yet, but we may as well keep it going in case something comes up.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we're not ruling out a season 2 in the future when the right idea arrives.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I've just realized, Luke, I'm just going through our email box and we've just within the last 5 minutes have received a new email in our inbox.
You're kidding.
All right, okay, here we go.
We'd laid these all out so beautifully.
Greetings. I am Mr. Fuzli Kizro, and I work at a prime bank in Turkey, and I have a proposal for you. To introduce you to the bank as the next of kin to our late customer, Mr. Heath Liam, who died during the March 11, 2011 earthquake disaster in Japan while on a business trip. He died without a registered next of kin, and as he was divorced and had no child. So if willing to partner with me, please contact me, and I'll detail you the way forward to achieving this success. Thanks and blessings from God, F. Chris Rao.
I mean, I have to say his impeccable grammar fills me with confidence.
Yeah, look, I'm flattered, Fuzli. Thank you for the email.
Obviously, we're in.
It seems unusual that Prime Bank in Turkey has taken 13 years to find a next of kin for this poor man.
Well, that just means his estate's been accruing interest. I think we should send our bank account details.
Yeah, right. Okay. Well, we'll put all of our ad revenue towards it.
Okay. Well, there definitely won't be another podcast. We're very rich now.
Thanks, everyone, for sending questions through. It was great to sort of have these conversations and to be able to sort of, you know, respond to some of these questions. Again, if you want to get in touch with us for any reason at all, if you know of anything, if you've got any information about anything at all, drop us a line. The best way to get in touch with us is by email. It's telecomsucks1993. It's telecomsux1993@gmail.com. And hope you check out some of our interview episodes in the near future. Ka kite.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight. and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.